Hey everybody, it's Brad Williams and Adam Ray for the About Last Night podcast. Today's episode is brought to you by White Cloud e-cigarettes.
We're not saying you should start smoking, but if you already do, awesome. And if you've ever wanted to try an e-cigarette, these are the ones to go with. White Cloud e-cigarettes offers over 20 flavors. That's almost as many as Baskin-Robbins. 20 flavors and 6 nicotine strengths. It's cheaper than other e-cigarettes that you'll see at convenience stores and with much more variety. White Cloud e-cigarettes sponsors comedians. They've been doing it for over 2 years now. They've also sponsored comedy festivals like the Boston Comedy Festival and the Orlando Indie Comedy Festival. If you've ever been curious about trying an e-cigarette, I have. Well, the Fling is the low-cost, no-commitment way to do so. And the Fling offers same-day UPS shipping on orders before 6 p.m. Eastern.
But is there a website?
Customers can go to WCESigs.com. That's WCESigs.com.
But we want to make sure our listeners get them for cheap. So is there a coupon code?
To get 25% off of the order, use the coupon code ALNPODCAST. That's ALNPODCAST at WCESigs.com to get your White Cloud e-cigarettes today. And now, enjoy a brand new episode of the About Last Night podcast with Brad Williams and Adam Ray.
Hi-ho!
Yeah. I mean, I love this theme song so much that I almost am surprised, quite honestly, that I don't wake up to this.
You think that that should be your, like, alarm clock?
Yeah.
The future looks bright for me.
And Mario Lopez is juggling while that lyric is going. Now he's flexing. All right, well.
Well, sure, that's what he does.
And then Screech flexes. That's not good.
That's
good. Here's how it closes.
Today.
That just screams out like the jump where you all freeze in the air with your fist up like, today.
You know how bad I want a sitcom with you and I where we both freeze jump?
Oh, absolutely.
But guess what? Not in the intro. At the end of every episode. Doesn't matter what's going on. We freeze jump.
So,
and the director's like, guys, you can't freeze jump at the end of every episode. I go, that's what the guy who just got fired says.
Yeah.
And he goes, huh?
It's our show. We can freeze jump as many times as we want. Freeze jump mid-episode. Why not?
Wow.
We can have a conversation while we're frozen. You don't know, man. You don't know.
We could talk about Saved by the Bell of the college years forever, which is both a blessing and a curse of this podcast.
Sure, absolutely.
But I'd like to talk about our guest today.
Yeah!
Who is a guy we've been wanting to have on for a long time because he's one of the funniest comics in the game, and he's one of the guys who's had a journey and jobs in the business and a growing up before comedy story that you just forget that even there's stories like this to even exist.
Absolutely.
Our guest is Owen Smith.
Yeah.
And he grew up in a very, not a very easy place in Maryland.
Sure.
To live with.
Single moms.
In a whole apartment building of single moms.
Right.
And
which we found out. And just to have that whole sort of neighborhood dynamic, which we found out, like, everyone in the neighborhood kind of bound together to raise all the kids.
You and I didn't grow up in a predominantly African-American neighborhood where, as we found out, we're...
based on how I wear my pants, you might think that. But shockingly, no.
Based on how perfectly my sideburns are trimmed, you might think that. But like hearing Owen tell us about how he, when he realized he wanted to be a stand-up comedian, and he'll tell the story better, he kept it a secret because it was so... such common knowledge that if you told people your dreams, that they would shoot you down and tell you, and you have this very impressionable child mind that was going to believe somebody who was older than you, that you go, oh, they've been out in the world, they're an adult, they know that this is not possible. That's why they're telling me.
Yeah, and that's something I've never even considered. So to hear that, and to hear that Owen had the maturity and the wherewithal to do that is just mind-blowing.
And how incredible his mom was and instrumental in his, growing up and following his dreams. And you and I, who are, you know, both mama's boys and appreciate a good mama story.
Damn right.
Unbelievable. And then his story of just getting to L.A., getting a writing job on Everybody Hates Chris, getting into a punch-up battle with Chris Rock.
That story, I love this story.
It's unbelievable.
Playing a game of Can You Top This? With Chris Rock and not being intimidated, just going, because how many guys would have the stones to do that? Chris Rock says a joke and you say a joke on top of that, Chris Rock fires back and you're like, oh, really, motherfucker? And I don't know why I did that in that voice. It's just a really fascinating interview with him. And Owen's one of these guys where you might say, Owen Smith, who's that? But then if you Google him, you'd be like, oh, that guy.
Yeah.
Because he's been in so many commercials. He's done so much.
He's written for award shows that you've watched. He's written for so many TV shows that you've watched. Sure. And his stand-up comedy is quickly getting more and more in your face on the internet. And right now...
Right now.
You can get it. His new stand-up special, which you got to get, called Good Luck Everybody, is available for download on his website, owensmithisfunny.com. And Brad and I both watched it. And you know what?
It's good, man.
We don't bullshit because it doesn't serve us to not plug shit we don't like.
Right.
And Owen has such a fucking sharp mind. From the moment I saw him at the Comedy Store, I was like, oh, this guy just, like, gets it and has such a great way of delivering stuff that, like, you know, this special is very much about getting engaged and being married and being out of the game now.
And that transition from being the single guy to the married guy, and looking back on his single years and now looking what his single friends are up to. And Owen's one of those guys where he's sort of been a comic secret. Like we've all known about him, and we've all known he's funny.
Yeah.
And now, especially with this special, he's gonna pop, and we're letting you guys in on a secret that we've known for a while, and it's exciting. So by all means, go to his website, owensmithisfunny.com, download the special. It's only $5, well worth it. And you're really gonna have a good
time.
And he
shot the whole special on 10 iPhones, which has never been done before. It looks great. It sounds great. His material, again, is so strong. He shot at the West Side Comedy Theater in Santa Monica, which is a great little small venue that Neil Brennan runs a every Sunday night show at. And Owen crushed it. And you got to get it. His special, Good Luck Everybody, at owensmithisfunny.com. Of course, you can also check out his podcast on owensmithisfunny.com. The podcast is called Alias Smith and Leroy Podcast. Owen, they interview a lot of African-American entertainers, people mm-hmm. that have, you know, the guy who just wrote 12 Years a Slave. They just had on somebody who was one of the big producers at Everybody Hates Chris with him. It's hearing these, again, great stories from people who didn't just show up to Hollywood and get a key to success. Owen is definitely one of those guys that has put in the time and the work and is now reaping the benefits. Follow Owen on Twitter at Owen Smith for Real, the number 4, and then the word real. Owen Smith, the number 4 real on Twitter. Follow me on Twitter at Adam Ray Comedy. Follow Brad on Twitter at Funny Brad. And come see us live. Brad, where are you going to be coming up?
Well, Syracuse, New York, I'm coming to you. I'm going to be at the Funny Bone June 18th through the 21st, Syracuse, New York. Then San Diego, California, I'm doing a theater show. That's right, a theater show. I'm going to be at the Observatory Theater in San Diego July 2nd. And then Irvine, California, near my hometown, July 3rd. I'm going to be at the Irvine Impone. I'm bringing Mr. Adam Ray to that show.
Yeah.
That's, and on stage, we're going to do a slow motion high five, and then we're going to freeze in midair.
Oh, my God.
Quite sure how we're going to do it, but if anyone has David Copperfield's phone number, if you could just tweet it at
us. Or his DVD on how to float.
Sure. We'll make that happen. So come out and see the About Last Night podcast crew. July 3rd at the Irvine Improv. Adam, where are you going to be?
Well, this Saturday I'll be at the Ice House Comedy Club in Pasadena doing stage 2 at 9:30. Come see me there. And then Scottsdale, Arizona, I will be at the Laugh Factory June 25th through the 28th at the Laugh Factory, brand new Laugh Factory in Scottsdale, Arizona. Get your tickets at laughfactory.com. And then, of course, you can see me with Brad July 3rd, 7:30 and 9:45, the Irvine Improv. Get your tickets at improv.com. Come out and see us. A bunch of new material from both of us, and that club's incredible. Come out, party with us. We'll for sure be staying down there, having a great time.
We will be.
There's always a lot of chaos when we stay in the OC area.
There really is.
Stories that we cannot tell on this podcast, which I know bums you out. But you know what? Come to the show, and maybe you get to hang out with us after and see these stories.
Maybe you'll be a part of the stories. Maybe we'll talk about you on the podcast. Who knows?
And then, of course, I'm headlining my home club, Bellevue, Washington, the Parlor Live in Bellevue, Washington, June 9th through the 11th. Get your tickets at Parlor Live. LevityLive.com. And then, of course, I just added two shows in New York. I'm a headline Levity Live in West Nyack on July 29th at 8 p.m. and Gotham Comedy Club in New York City on July 30th, also an 8 p.m. show. Get your tickets at improv.com for both of those clubs. And, of course, keep subscribing to the podcast on iTunes. Give us a five-star rating. Comment on the iTunes page. Can't say it enough. Takes 2 seconds. Write something positive, yes. Please. Or negative. Hey, if you hate the podcast, hey, freedom of speech, man. But guess what? We will find a way to delete your negative bullshit.
And we'll use a tracking device. I know a lot of good hackers. And we'll replace your entire iTunes music library with nothing but Nickelback songs.
No!
You think I won't do it, but I will.
Then head over to StoryMerchandise.com and pick up your ALN merch. We've got Roni and the Quave shirts and mugs. We've got the Titanic shirts and mugs. We've got ABLN shirts. Get the merch. Wear it to the shows. Show your support, man. We love that you listen and tweet at us and email us and comment on the iTunes page and tell us in person. It's the best for both of us when people come up.
It's great every time.
Yeah. I mean, it's...
It's great every time. It's kind of like a blowjob. Even when it's not that great, it's fucking great.
But you also just seem like one of the old ladies in like a Denny's commercial when they're like, "How did you like the Grand Slam breakfast?"
It's great every time.
Mildred gets her SAG card.
Yeah, it's a fucking go-to.
By the way, Mildred gets her SAG card is another one man show I'm putting on.
I'm pretty sure Morgan Freeman narrates it. Let me tell you about the time Mildred went down to the acting office and she got a SAG card. She then had to pay
the end. It's the shortest play ever. And of course, go to aboutlastnightpodcast.com to listen to all past episodes. And when you're there, click on the Amazon banner and do your shopping through the Amazon banner and pick up a copy of Owen Smith's special.
Yep.
Good luck, everybody. Mm-hmm. Pick up a copy of Pop-Tart Suicide, my comedy CD. Pick up a copy of Brad's CDs.
Hi-Ho and Coming Up Short. Do that.
And also, if you're there, you know, just pick up, I don't know, old Fraggle Rock DVDs.
Oh, you got to do that. Absolutely. Maybe a drone? Sure. Why not? Just don't get a drone that could actually pick up dwarves. That fucking terrifies me.
Does that exist?
I don't know, but I don't want it to.
Do you just sit around creating fears?
Probably.
There's enough to worry about in the world, but I guess as a comedian, we have so much downtime. Sometimes you YouTube pregnancy videos in Sacramento.
Sure.
Sometimes, not talking about me, but sometimes it was the most terrifying thing I've ever seen.
Yeah. So sometimes I just think about all the things that I have to worry about that you guys don't, like dogs that mistake me for a chew toy. I'm terrified of that shit. I'm terrified of it. Listen, man, curbs that are way too high that I'm not expecting, all of a sudden the fall is just catastrophic. So, yeah, that, and then I'm just worried about drones. Drones are getting bigger and better, and pretty soon one's going to just pick me up and take me away like one of the pterodactyls from Jurassic World. I'm terrified of this shit.
Nice
this is
plug.
Happening. In fact, I'm going to go buy a helmet right now. Granted, I'm going to go through the aboutlastnightpodcast.com
nice.
And click on the Amazon banner, then buy the helmet from Amazon. But I'm scared, Adam Ray.
Those are the dwarf fears. Those are the Twitter handles. That's all the merch info. That's all the tour date info. Now sit back, relax, and enjoy a very hilarious episode of the About Last Night podcast with our guest, the very funny
Owen Smith.
Well, the weekend's over, so it's time to chat about it. Got a midget and a Jew, so why don't you sit down and listen to our dope podcast during lunch, dinner, or breakfast. Brad Williams and Adam Ray are here for you any time of the day. So come on and treat yourself right. It's about last night.
Were you here last night?
No, I could just feel it. I could feel the energy.
Is that a good thing or is it like a...
Oh, it's hilarious.
This is coming from an almost married man.
Oh, yeah. Well, married now.
Married?
I got the ring.
Yeah.
Thanks, man. Yeah. So, but I know what this is. I see that look in your eye. You got the guitar case against the wall. This is perfect.
Oh,
do you play? Oh, my. You got there, all of the things.
There's not even a guitar in there.
No, it's not a guitar.
Fuck you.
It's just an empty case.
He's got a bar. He's got his Mad Men bar over here.
You know what's so funny about it? It's like, I love that you're assessing this as if I did any sort of planning that went into creating the ambiance. This is just, like, literally, my roommate and I mean, it's like, you know, I brought that couch from Seattle. Uh-huh. I put up this stuff because once we established we're going to do the podcast here. And then it was like, oh, yeah, we both just started putting booze there. But we don't, neither one of us, like, try to organize it in a real fancy fashion.
Yeah,
so there's also lighters and keychains and basketball trophies from rec leagues that were co-ed that hilarious. Don't really matter, but I held on to because fucking it's a talking point.
Yeah, and it's a trophy. And plus, there's I mean, sure, there's a basketball player on the bottom of the trophy, but you can make some shit up. You
make something up.
You know, like some woman says, oh my God, what's that trophy for? You'd be like, Nobel Peace Prize. Says, oh yeah, got a Pulitzer too. That's a Congressional Medal of Honor. I was over in Afghanistan. We lost a lot of good men, but now I'm back, feeling very safe in your arms. You know?
And then you walk in, you got the pool, right? You can give a little tour, right?
Oh my God, this is great. I just love just the energy that
now,
I'm feeling here.
Now that you're married, have you turned into that guy now that's like you sort of live through your single buddies? Like you kind of encourage them to do crazy shit.
I still celebrate my single buddies. Yeah. Like I'm not at the place yet where I'm like, man, you gotta fuck her for us. Like I'm not
Which is the weirdest sentence a man can say to another man.
Crazy. Dude, my dick is your dick now. Okay.
but
what? It's so true. Everyone's got those buddies that like are just that. But that's what do you figure that place being if you're married and you're starting to?
Well, I've always been pro us. Like I feel like, you know, it's kind of hard. Our point of view gets swallowed up. You know what I mean? And so what I enjoy doing, because I come from a family of a lot of women, and I enjoy when they complain about men. I listen. And then I enjoy saying, or it could be this, and I enjoy them not getting defensive.
Yeah.
I really love them going, I never looked at it that way.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of like always been my MO. Like the special I just shot, like the whole thing I came up with was that, because I hear a lot of women say they have to kiss a lot of frogs to find their prince.
Mm-hmm.
You hear that. And that's, you know, okay, I get it.
Yeah.
But I started thinking about it. I was like, well, nobody talks about all the women we frogs got to take out to dinner, dancing, movies, concerts, trips.
And then we kiss them and we're like, oh, we're still a fucking frog.
Yeah. And they had a full belly before they had to kiss us. Full belly of food. They got to see the Beyonce
trophy on my shelf.
They got a nice tour of the spot, almost a guitar with an acoustic concert. So it was just like, you know, yeah.
How many women? Because I was raised by my mom and sis. Pretty much. And my sis went away to a school, and it was just my mom and I. And I definitely feel like that has contributed to me being and I know we joked about my single life before we got in here, but I was in three back-to-back relationships for pretty much from 19 to like 27. And I feel like, and that's why I'm single.
That's why the Incredible Hulk is right now.
You got the facer hair and shit. I got the
Beach Boys tank top, the chest hair hanging off.
I don't know what happened last night.
That's a personal question, Owen.
My mom, I was raised, I say I was raised by a single mom. Mm-hmm. I joke and say before it was popular, meaning that like when I was dating every woman, when you get to an age where every woman you meet has a kid, you know what I mean? You're like, oh shit. Like it's that classic scene where you're like, you're in a food court and you see a girl walk through. You're like, oh my gosh, she's fine as shit. It's like slow motion. Her hair is blowing. Then she stops and she turns around. Come on here, boy. And like and three little kids run up behind you. Like, oh fuck. And everybody just go back to texting. And so I was like, so I mean,
but it definitely made you, like for me, it made me more definitely sensitive, and like you said, like to listen to the other side. Like if you were always in the middle of hearing, like you said, they're complaining, but did you just innately know, like, oh, okay, like there's, I'm gonna listen.
No, it was all, we're all engineered and we're all taught. My mom told me that she raised me to be the man she wished she married. So my dad had, he was raised, I was born in the Bahamas, but I was raised in Maryland, so I grew up in Maryland. I would go back to the Bahamas, you know, to hang out with my dad, but my dad, you know how you like, I seek to understand who my father was. So my father, he was only really given props if he was, you know, getting some pussy. Can I say pussy on
it? Say whatever you want.
Like, so like, and I remember as a kid when I would talk to like my grandparents, my grandfather, I'd be like 7. He would call me on my birthday and I'd be like, hey, how you doing? You got a girlfriend? I was like, I'm 7. Let me talk back to your mom. Like, it was like a, like I disappointed him. Like, I should be out here in these streets, like, getting these bitches. But my mom didn't give me a pat on the back, you know, when I was, if I had a girlfriend, or, you know, she was like, all right, that wasn't a thing. Like, you know, but for my dad, you know, whatever women he had, I gave him status. And so he didn't know how to turn that off. So when you were in a monogamous relationship with a person who loved as hard as my mom did, he didn't know how to value that. Like, he told me he didn't become a man, meaning that he was not unfaithful until he was like 55. Because he had to just see like all the damage his shit did.
So,
you know,
he was like a tornado,
people.
And then he had to like look behind himself and go, damn, that was me?
That was me, yeah.
Oh,
but he didn't know, you know, what his selfishness was affecting.
Right.
You know what I mean? But I lived with it. So, like, growing up with my mom, I knew that, you know, the hurt that she had.
You could see
gambled.
How much it was affecting her.
Yeah, man. And this woman, I loved her, and she was so unselfish and just raised me. You know, she was like, I joke, but she was like that Baltimore riot mom. Like, I grew up in a neighborhood where there were all those elements. But my mom just did not, she was not afraid to embarrass herself to go get me.
I love that video, by the way.
That's my mom. My mom was that, like, it got to the point, like, I had to be home. Everybody knew in my neighborhood that I had to be home when the streetlights were on.
Mm-hmm.
But I was the only child, which meant I had a football. Like, you know what I mean? Like a lot of my friends had brothers and sisters. So if it's one income, you know, that's when people say, we grew up poor, dude. We weren't rich, but it was enough money for me to have a football.
Yeah.
So I'd be the dude. We'd be playing football with my football.
Yeah.
But the whole neighborhood knew I had to be home when them lights came on, or Viola Smith I was going to come outside and just get to get go with rollers on and a belt. And she would call my name. I don't know if you remember that P. Diddy video when he was like, bad boy. My mom was walking the neighborhood like, oh. And you would see the little thugs and the dudes that selling weed or whatever. They'd be like, yo, oh, and shit, here come your mother. Like, they was like.
Would she whoop that belt like Indiana Jones?
She
was about to battle the lion?
Yeah. And if she did not care, house robe, just walking out like, where the fuck is my son? And my mom, but she was real. She wouldn't curse in public. She would go, forgive my French and shit like that. And so she would go, oh, and you, it was so funny. But here come your mother. And like, the neighborhood would work together. I'd be like, which way is she coming from? She coming from the front way. Go the back way.
Yeah. It's kind of like an echo. You're just like, it's like you're in a scene from Friday the 13th.
Yeah.
And all you're hearing is the shh.
Yeah.
It became like,
he's coming. What's happening?
That's it.
You guys were like the Goonies of the streets. You were like trying
together,
to.
Together, man. Yeah. It was so. Whenever I tried to get involved in like that silliness, they would always be like, nah, man. Nah, man. You know your mother ain't going to have it. Like, everybody knew.
Wow. So they were all protecting you.
Yeah, it became. And that's what's going to happen to that kid. The community's going to protect that dude.
Absolutely.
They're
going
to be like, you know you need to be home.
Yeah, because we saw what your mom did.
Yeah, and that's what she did.
Adam, did you see that video?
Yeah.
Yeah, how great was that?
Yeah, it was incredible.
Incredible,
yeah,
man.
Because moms and parents you see too often of a parent whose kid's getting into some stuff and she's just saying like, I don't know what happened. I don't know what occurred and I don't know what I can do. Well, there's an option.
Get in there. Yeah, my mom she kept me busy too.
Yeah.
It was amazing, man. She kept me involved, so I didn't have a lot of idle time. Like, I had practice, you know what I mean? Like, I can't come.
Practice for what?
Well, I played basketball, I played baseball, I got all those trophies, baseball.
Were you always just tall?
I was always one of the taller people, so that helped too.
Yeah.
But I have a short torso, so when I sit down, people think I'm not that tall.
Oh, I totally feel your pain, Owen. Short torso. Oh, it's gotta suck for you having a short torso, but still being 6'2".
Get over it. You ain't growing, Brad.
You must have cried yourself in sleep every night with that short torso. They called you Short Torso Smith. STS. Oh, I got that STS, Short Torso Smith Syndrome.
Oh, God.
Yeah, I'm going to leave this whole topic alone. But yeah.
What, were you? Okay, so you did all sports.
I played a lot of sports. But speaking of trophies, though, it was funny because whenever Joe Rogan comes to the Comedy Store, or whenever Joe Rogan walks past me, someone feels the need to tell me how many like black belts he has, like how accomplished he is as like a fighter. It just comes up casually. They go, you know, he's a triple black, you know, and it's like, it's legendary how amazing he is in self-defense. I don't really know him personally. Mm-hmm. I don't understand
why. Are you a big?
No, well, I'm getting to a point. Gotcha. Like, it's like, so like whenever he walks by, somebody just goes, you know, basically, you know, he can fuck you up. Like, it's basically, that's in the air. You know what I mean? Like,
wow.
I don't know what his belts are. You guys may know specifically.
Like, the guy walks by and you see Rogan, and it's not like it's a surprising thing.
Yeah.
It's not like Rogan's walking by as a twig, and you're like, did you know he actually has? It's like, no, you look at that guy like, yeah, he could probably fuck me up without the black belts.
Yeah.
Now he's a trained weapon. You're just putting a scope on top of a cannon.
Yeah.
Like,
I don't care what the color of the band that's holding up his pants is. Like, he just looks like a big dude.
He looks like a big dude. But so my point is, when I was growing up, I got, you know, you get those trophies.
Yeah.
And one time, one of my trophies broke, and I didn't know there was a place where they made trophies.
Mm-hmm.
So we went to go get the trophies repaired, and I was like, oh, shit, they got martial arts trophies. So when I saved my allowance, I would just buy, like, martial arts trophies so that it would spread in the neighborhood that I could do that shit. And all I had to do was take one little lap with my trophy, and motherfuckers would be like, yo, you know he could fuck you up. He be having them trophies with the little fighting men on it. And that's one of the things I used to do just so I could. And then fortunately, it never got to a point where a girl could be like, he could fuck you up.
I
never had to, like,
I'm sure you had those thoughts, though, right? Like, God, what if I get in a position, though?
Yeah, man, but it was something about the power of motherfuckers. If somebody just saves somebody, could fuck you up.
Yeah.
It's a weird thing. So I was like, man, how much that trophy cost? You know what I mean? $25, shit. And I went and I would buy just one
best
little trophy.
Investment ever.
And I would start with a little one, and I'd just walk around the neighborhood.
And just holding it?
Yeah, in a couple more months, I get a little medium one. Walk, just do a walk.
Now,
I don't say shit. I'm just walking.
Now, could people see what it was, or would they ask you? And then
the light, I would hold it up. I might stop and talk. Yeah, it was a little thing I do, a little taekwondo, whatever.
On the side.
Yeah, man, but I don't want people knowing. I would just do that shit and walk out. And then,
I don't want people to know I'm carrying the trophy.
As
I pass my house, do another lap around the block.
That was it, man. That was it. That was my move.
Listen, I don't want people to know. I know I'm carrying this flashlight in my right hand, and I'm shining light on the trophy in my left hand. But I mean, that's just to keep it shiny. I don't know what you guys are talking about with me trying to brag about
that. It.
Dude, that is so clever, because as a kid, like, you get a trophy at the end of the year, you don't realize there's a trophy store. You just think, like, well, there's a god of sports, and he looked down upon our team and said, you have earned this, my children, and gave us a trophy. It's like, no, you just go down to the damn store.
Yeah.
And also, we waste trophies. We get these trophies from the sports, and then you put them on a shelf, and they sit there, and nothing happens.
Collect dust.
Point being, behind me, I mean, obviously, like, now it's serving a great purpose.
Trophy paid you back, brother. Come on now. I would love to do, like, a montage of all the lies you told about this trophy.
Hilarious. Yeah. Well, you all right? Well, I'll fund the Kickstarter if you want to make the documentary.
Let's do it.
But that you actually, like, you know, made a purpose out of it. Now for comedy.
Yeah.
How did you? I mean, was your mom influential in that, or was your sisters having all, like?
Yes and no. Like, I loved making. My mom is one of eight, so she is. So I had a lot of aunts. I had six beautiful aunts and two uncles. One of my uncles passed. And my whole family's from New Jersey on my mom's side. And they're just the best laughers, man. And they
remember, like, the first thing you ever did that, like, made every, like,
there's
something where the whole family laughed at you, right? Where you did something.
Well, for me, it was also like being from the Bahamas. Like, I don't have thick eyebrows, and I just look different. I have a bigger forehead than most people in my neighborhood. So I'd be outside playing. We all black, but one kid would always be like, where you from? Where you from? I'd be like, I live over there, 5072. Now, where you from? And I'd be like, I'm from the Bahamas, and I had a lisp and shit. I'm the Bahamas. You Bahamanian. Hey, y'all, he Bahamaman. And so you had to learn how to, like, make fun of yourself and make fun of other people. And it was just, I developed that muscle, like, real fast. And then I just used to be funny. And I loved making people laugh. And it kind of kept them away from focusing in that I wasn't really from where they were, you know?
It's funny how, real quick, sorry to interrupt, but, like, being the self-deprecation, how necessary that is as a kid, but you don't realize, because you still, you want to be accepted, you want to be a part,
If
you just have a little bit of a sense of humor about yourself and can do it, make fun of yourself, not only does that put everybody at ease, but it's so, like, not a lot of kids do it.
It's an
easy way to be accepted, and then also take the pressure off yourself of...
Of
being really sensitive about shit.
And you learn your limits. It's like you learn when you go too far. Like, back when I grew up, Jerry curls were out, so it was a sensitive thing, but it was also it was a home run thing. If I start in on this curl, I'm gonna have a good night. You know what I mean? I'm about to be legendary. But some people will be waiting for you in front of your building, like, I ain't like all that shit you said about my curl.
No shit.
So you had to figure it out. Like, did you see the trophy, motherfucker? You know, it's out there about me. You know, so it was
that's the thing. You can't leave. It's like as a boxer, you don't just come in throwing the haymaker. Nah. You got to come in with a couple of jabs and set him up. So you got to always have that. You got to have that Jerry Curl joke chambered.
Yep, have
just
it right
like,
there.
All right, like in emergency, break glass. Yep. If it gets to this point.
Yeah.
Before we get into more of just childhood comedy and how that got going, Bahamas, growing up there. So you spent how much time there?
Well, 9 months, and then my mom dad split up. Yeah, they were married for 6 years, had me. My dad was, you know, doing what he was doing, and my mom just had enough and just took me out of the Bahamas.
Yeah.
And I found out later that, I don't want to say this on air, but I found out I wasn't taken out, like, legally. Because years later, I'm kicking it with my dad.
Yeah.
And I find out in the passport office, my dad was like, you should get a Bahamian passport because it's hot right now for Americans, and I don't want you to be overseas. And they see your American passport and they fuck with you. I was like, oh, yeah, let's go do it. So we go down there. Hey. And I had a lot of commercials running at the town. So I was like, yeah, let's go do it. And I went in, and it was the easiest passport process ever, because we had to contact a relative who worked in the because the Bahamas is very slow with bureaucratic red tape. Like, when you go there, that you slow down. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But they were able to call somebody in, I guess.
Island time is real.
Island time is very real.
Yeah.
So I was able to go down there and get my birth certificate, a copy of it, really quick to prove that I was born in the Bahamas. And I was born right before they got their independence, which means all my children, when I have children, they can become Bahamian citizens if they choose.
Right. Really?
So I was born in 7373, and Bahamians Independence Day is 7973, so 6 days right before this, when they were still a British colony, right? Mm-hmm. So we go in, and I got a new picture. I was very happy at a picture. Yeah. I was like, this is going to be a dope passport. Go right through, and this lady goes, how'd you get into the Bahamas? How'd you leave the Bahamas? And I was like, it was my dad. He was messing up, and my mom just, you know, took me. How'd you get out of the Bahamas? My mom on a plane. Obviously, I was 9 months, you know, and my dad was like, this is bullshit. Let me talk to your supervisor. So they put us in a smaller room, and another lady comes in. How'd you get out of the Bahamas? It's like, airplane.
9 months old. Don't have a photographic memory of the situation.
I don't know what I did. I was nine. I just went with the people. So I call my mom on the side. I go, Mom, we in this passport office, and I'm trying to get a passport. And I hear my mom. It's only one other time my mom yelled this much. She was like, get the hell out of there now. Like, you hear it coming through the phone. I go, all right, so we're going to go. And then I go, I had a little bit of ego with it. I was like, maybe when I become, you know, famous enough, they'll let me, you know, just get a passport here. And she goes, oh, I know who you are. Shock. She did one of my commercials right to my face.
Get out.
Yeah, right to my face.
Wow.
And I was like, oh, I know who you are. Shock. So I had this commercial where my arm gets bitten off by a shark.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I was like, whoa. And so apparently in their system, I was not released. And so I was scared. I didn't know if I'd have to stay there and all this other shit.
Do you start to fantasize about, wow, maybe I just start a new life in the Bahamas? Like, maybe.
Nah, that hasn't. No, it hasn't gotten to that point. But I just remember, what the fuck happened, Ma? And it's that she doesn't really talk about that time.
Sure,
you know what I mean?
Sure.
It's just like, she's like, I did what I had to do. So,
well, like, in addition to the stuff that's going on with your family, I would almost look at that situation of you getting out of the Bahamas for your career as a good thing, because I know that if I was raised in the Bahamas, I wouldn't be doing jack shit.
Oh no, I know,
because it's beaches and it's
crazy.
It's beautiful people everywhere, and it's just like, why would I work really hard? Like,
I got paradise.
Yeah, like, people work really hard to get to a place like this. Like, I'm good.
Here. Yeah, your Jerry Curl bits probably aren't going to hit as hard as
on land. Although they might still have them there.
It's slowly getting through.
Slowly.
Like, they're only on Karate Kid 2.
Yeah. They still think Will Smith is still rapping over there.
Like, have you heard this fucking Just the Two of Us?
Right.
This is great. Yeah. Welcome to Miami. It's right there. It's the best. That's our jam.
Yeah, man.
What music were you into as a kid?
As a kid, man, I was into my cousin Daniel, man. He was like my big brother. He introduced me to Run DMC, and I was so into that hip hop era. Like, and we used to break dance in the neighborhood. And I was in the R&B. The first concert I saw was New Edition.
Oh my god!
Oh,
yeah,
if it is love.
Yeah, man. New Edition, man.
How was that?
It was insane. Oh, it was me, Boo, Mirando, Preston. My mom took us. My mom was like she was the community. She would take us to practice and back. She was there, man. And so we saw a New Edition, and we came home, and we formed an R&B singing group. Me, Boo, Mirando, Preston, and I want to say Cross Eye Craig and or Fat Adrian.
Wait, what?
Was subbed in. Yeah,
Cross Eye Craig?
Yeah, this is why we grew up wrong, Brad.
Dude,
our friends are like Matt and Steve.
Nah, man, I had the best friends. They had the best names ever, man. Me, Boo, Preston, Mirando, Cross Eye Craig, my man DeMartius.
I didn't have a lazy eye Larry or anything like that.
Cross Eye Craig's a barber, too. Now, it's phenomenal.
Oh, wait, God. He cuts hair and he's got a cross eye?
But everybody know he's the nicest. So,
yeah.
But if you knew, you'd be like, yo, but
right.
He's the nicest with it. Yeah, man.
Yeah, so we had like Weird Titty Jill because she had like one titty that was bigger than the other in sixth grade.
That's a great name.
We had like fucking, you know, Big Boob Brenda, which she had just big boobs in like the fourth grade.
That's
it was like
beautiful.
Basically, they're all revolved around boobs.
Yeah,
that's it. That's pretty much all the funny nicknames I grew up on.
That's what brought me into this world.
People call me Lil Brad, and I'm like, really? Lil Brad? That's the best you could do?
That's hilarious.
Lil Brad? You can't spend 5 minutes, maybe workshop something, get something out.
Start like, a workshop.
Yeah, like
yeah, not, do a think tank.
You not come up with a better nickname than Lil Brad? Now if they call me that, people think I'd be a rapper or something like that. Like,
shit,
yo, man, this Lil B, he's got that hot joint.
Yeah, you was ahead of your time, man.
What was the name of your group?
Oh man, I don't know if we had a name. We had enough New Edition, but we used to go around the neighborhood and sing it. I gotta ask Boo because Boo, his real name is Alfred Antonio Duncan, and good choice
on Boo.
Yeah, I'm so proud of him though, man, because he was my next door neighbor and he was like my little brother, right?
Yeah.
And Boo, when I moved from the neighborhood, we kind of just lost touch, right? And we just got reunited this year.
Holy
over
shit.
Like 20 years, man.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, dude. And my man, he came to my show at the Comedy Store. It was fucking amazing.
Had he seen you do stand-up?
I don't know how he seen. He never seen me live. I'm pretty certain.
Well, that's what I mean,
because
that's
online.
A completely different thing.
Yeah, and he had his girl. I hope. I don't want to put it out there. Maybe fiance, man. I don't know. But he came out. And he came out for the Grammys because he could sing, right? And in my neighborhood, I remember I used to just pray for Boo. Like, I was like, I hope nobody tells him to stop singing because his voice was like one of those voices that just moved you.
Yeah, dude.
20 years later, he was coming out here. He was nominated for a Grammy. So
what?
Almost
what
brought me to tears. He was on this Jamaican
album. The story's going to bring me to tears.
Yeah,
that's incredible,
on this Jamaican album with this other dude. God, I can't remember his name. I'm so sorry, Boo. Fuck, I remember it. You put it in your show.
Well, here, what's his real name?
His name's Alfred Antonio Duncan, and it was Boo, and he told me the name of the artist, man. I'm sorry, I'm not recalling it right now.
Yeah, Brad will look it up.
But yeah, he got nominated, and it was I almost cried, man, because I was like, and I remember because he used to sing in this group called Mambo Sauce. It was go-go music is big in our neighborhood, right, in our area, in our DMV. And I was sleep on my couch one day because I love music videos, and it was playing in the background, and I heard a voice that just felt familiar, and I woke up, and I was like, "That's Boo!" And he was in a music video.
Holy
and the song's
shit.
Called "Welcome to DC," and I was like jumping up, and I was crying and celebrating, he's still singing, and I loved it because when you asked me about the comedy question, I knew I was going to be a comedian at 9, but I didn't tell anybody.
Why?
Because it's just my neighborhood. I saw people get their dreams crushed from the spoken word. Because when you were a kid, you just go, I want to do this. Man, you can't do that, man. White man ain't going to let you do that shit, man. I do that better than you. And as
there's a
7-year-old, 8-year-old kid, that stays with you. Because you look at these people as like, in the building I grew up with, I didn't even realize this, but in the building I grew up in, like it was all single moms. So we didn't know that. You know, that was just our world. But when we went outside, you know, and you talk to older dudes and you don't have like a father figure around, if the only other older guy is telling you you can't do something, that stays with
you. Take that to heart.
You. Yeah. Because you're like, well, you look like an older version of me. And so you've been out there longer than me.
Wow.
So now, but when I saw that happening to some of my friends, I was like, I ain't sharing this dream with nobody. I'm going to just keep being funny.
Holy
and
shit.
And so whenever I would make people laugh, in my mind, I was like, I'm being a comedian right
so
now.
So you were doing it like secretly. Yeah.
Secretly, yo.
So did you not even want some of these, like, so you would just do it with your friends, because your friends weren't telling you can't do it. Right?
No. And everybody just would say, they would just go, man, Owen, funny. Yeah, man, you so crazy, man. You so funny. Like, or you stupid, or you, like, whatever. And that was all I needed.
You can
tell
at that point the way, when you get enough comments from friends consistently, you're like, oh, nobody else is getting this sort of feedback.
That was all I needed. And I was so afraid to to tell people that that's what I wanted to do.
That's fucking
because I didn't
crazy.
Know how it was going to be, you know, received.
And you didn't want them to break you down for it.
Yeah, man, because it was genuinely what I wanted to do. It wasn't right. anything I was iffy on, and I was going to put it out there to see if somebody go, you could do that. I knew that I wanted
now,
to do
Now, who were you
that.
Like? Who did you look up?
The first person I saw yeah. do it, the first person I heard do it, and I didn't know was Bill Cosby, because I had a mm-hmm. teacher who, if we behaved, he would play Cosby records.
Oh, God.
And
clean, you know?
Yeah.
Can we
yeah.
please start integrating that into schools?
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, no kidding,
yeah.
right?
Yeah, man.
Comedy, I mean, you joke about how it heals and it, like, makes shit better, but, like,
yeah.
what the fuck, man? Like, reward kids. If the teacher himself isn't hilarious, which, by the way, we can all attest yeah. to the best teachers that we've had, the ones who were actually kind of funny
yeah.
and loose,
yeah.
and because they make you want to learn more. So if yeah. you're rewarding with stuff like that, like, hey, here's something that's completely not school-related
yeah.
and is actually going to, like, make you smile and laugh unexpectedly in a place where you think laughing is, like, yeah. not condoned because yeah. you're supposed to be learning.
Yeah, and, yeah. And then, like, you have to earn it, so you kind of look forward to that. Like, oh, come on, guys, let's do this. Like, let's shut up. Let's get the work done. So, yeah. so then we could hear Bill Cosby, or we could hear nowadays be, like, yeah. Brian Regan or Jim Gaffigan or, like, a clean comic. That'd be fantastic.
Yeah, like, my, teacher would show us just, like, old DVDs of Carrot Top, and that's why it prolonged my comedy career. Because I was like, well, definitely that's not what I want to do, so I guess I'll...
That's not what I want to do. I don't have a hammer with an alarm clock.
Yeah, where do I get one of those?
Duct tape to
Hilarious.
It. Was it, going back, was it Jacob Hemphill?
Nah, I just text him, so hopefully he'll text me back.
Okay, yeah.
Me but a little shout-out to Jacob right Hemphill, wherever you are.
Congrats, yeah. man. Yeah, man, so
Alfred
it was...
Alfred Black Boo
Yeah,
Duncan.
That's him. That's my man. Yeah, because yeah. they said he was so black, he was like a ghost, so they called him Boo. So it's a lot of thought. And these nicknames.
I was going to say.
Yeah. He called them Boo. And he owned it, man. And we all called them Boo. And
and these guys you came up with because you said you were all women, right? All sisters?
No. We were all... My mom... I was raised by a single mom. His mom was a single mom. He had another sister. I'm saying in my apartment building.
Right, right.
We were all... It was all single moms raising us, but we didn't know that. And it was so funny. You could tell by, like, the landscaping.
Yeah.
In the apartment. Like, on Mother's Day, we would raid that landscaping to give our moms flowers. And on Father's Day, we would raid that landscaping to give our moms flowers. We didn't know. Like, we just didn't know that yeah. was what yeah. it was. Yeah. You know? And yeah. Boo brought that back to my attention because I was like... He was like, why do you think it took you so long to get married? I was like, yo, I just didn't see it. I didn't see it growing up. I didn't see right. my mom work it out with a dude. So all the women I picked, they never saw their mom work it out with a dude. So right. when you get to that place where you got to get to, like, intimacy and get past, you know, the little bullshit, I'm like, nah, I'm just going, I don't know what that looks
I'm
like.
Out.
I'm just
yeah.
going to protect me.
Right.
And they would be like, I'm just going to protect them. And it makes for great comedy and great stories, which I put in the special, you yeah. know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But it is what it was. And Boo said, oh, it wasn't in the building. Like, it was not a father in the bill. Not like, I'm not trying to make it like, woe is us. That was just what we...
You just didn't know.
Yeah. And so I was like, oh, shit. Now that I think about it, I was like, you right. Like, I'm thinking all the floor. Me and him was on the third floor. Oh, shit. And yeah. all my friends, it was kind of like, I never saw Lord of the Flies all the way through. But yeah. when we were as a group playing outside, we looked like Lord of... All these right. little boys running around trying to finger pop girls. And we had no map, man. We were just out there just trying to figure it out. And then... There's people slightly older than us just giving us
Please,
bad information.
Please, someone create a soda Good called Finger Pop.
So that's what we was out there
Yo,
doing, man.
I got cherry Finger Pop. That's the best. You got cherry Finger Pop in your lunch? I got pineapple Finger Pop. Pineapple sucks.
Yeah, man. I'm doing a cartoon about this, man, because I really feel like the area where we grew up is so unique
because
mm-hmm. it's not Baltimore. It's not Annapolis. It's PG County, Maryland. We talk a specific way. It's very unique culturally and
right.
and just character wise.
And
so,
especially for kids, yeah. are you trying to make the cartoon for
yeah,
kids?
Yeah, man.
Yeah, like because yeah. every cartoon, at least that I've seen, has like the traditional family unit. So
yeah.
the kid that doesn't have the dad, that doesn't have the mom, that right. has sort of a not traditional family unit, that would be great for them to look up, be like, oh yeah, look, all these moms are coming together and like. Playing dad, essentially.
Yeah, yeah. That's you know? What it was. Yeah, that's
yeah.
what it was, man. And it was great, though. I mean, we didn't know any different. You know what I mean?
Right.
But it was funny when he pointed that out to me. He was like, oh, shit, yeah, it wasn't in the building. He go, oh, it wasn't in the building. I was
yeah.
like, God, you right.
So you're keeping comedy on the lockdown.
On the lockdown,
But when
man.
Your teacher's playing Cosby, are you, like, going up me like, yo, this is, like, actually, like, exactly what I want to do?
Or? I remember... really loving it. I remember connecting with it. So when I first started, I was clean.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was because my first reference point to comedy was that. And I didn't grow up where like curse words were celebrated. You know what I mean? Right. So like my mom would always say, excuse my French. I literally thought curse words were French. So like when I was when I was in middle school, the teacher was like, anybody know any French? I was like, yeah, fuck shit. God damn it. I really was. I got sent to the office. I was a literal kid, man. Oh, I was like, yeah, I know French. I'm about to kill this shit.
Oh my God.
That's what I did.
Can you use French in a sentence?
Right.
Get your fucking ass over here.
Right. Fuck this bullshit.
Bad out of hell was something my mom would say. He came out of here like a bat out of hell.
Aren't those the best shit? The mom like angry metaphors.
Yeah.
Like
excuse my friend. I didn't know what the fuck French was. And then
that's so funny.
Yeah, so then
but so you were clean when you started, because of Cosby.
Yeah, but the first time I saw it and I go, oh shit, that's a thing, was I was 9 years old and I had a babysitter. Like growing up, like now everybody has nannies and shit. Mm-hmm. We had babysitters, so it was like a lady, and she was always real Christian, really nice woman, and she took, you know, drop your kids off. And she had HBO. And sometimes my mom, I guess looking back, even she had a date. Or she had something she had to do, I would spend the night there. Mm-hmm. And so when we spent the night, HBO came on, they played Eddie Murphy Delirious.
So
there's a couple of things going on. Now it affected everybody else, but this is why it affected me. I'm watching it, and every time he would curse, they would laugh real loud, but because they were so Christian, they would turn the channel. But they would keep laughing and be crying, like, oh, y'all can't be watching this.
Are you
serious? Y'all can't be watching this. Then they would turn back. Now, you can't tell a kid, y'all can't be watching. Then they would turn back, and I'm watching, I'm fucking loving it. But why I related to it is because Eddie Murphy was the same complexion as me. So he was a brown-skinned dude, you know, same kind of hair texture, prancing the stage. And he was, all I got was he was saying things and making people laugh in the same way I would say things, and I would make these people laugh the same way.
Were you also doing the kind of act outs and voices and
all
stuff?
All that shit, man. And I was just like, oh shit, that's what I do. I go, what's that called? And they were like, he's being a comedian. That's called a comedian. That's when I knew. I go, I'm doing that. I'm doing that for the rest of my life. And I literally thought, I go, but just not in that outfit. Like, I was like, I hope. No, real talk. I was like, I hope that's not the uniform.
Right.
Because I got a high booty. I can't pull off red leathers. Like, I hope. Because I knew the mailman wore the same shit every day. Our bus driver wore, you know, you know what I'm saying? The army people.
That uniform.
Yeah.
You don't know when you're seeing. You're like, is that this?
Yeah. I didn't know. But at that moment, and so then I had to watch that special. It was broken up, my first experience with it, because he kept cursing. So whenever he would curse, they would turn, but they would be literally crying. Yeah. And I didn't fully understand everything, but my aunt Sissy, who I was raised basically by my mom, my aunt Sissy, and my aunt Sharon. My aunt Sissy had HBO, and she lived in Southeast DC in Marbury Plaza. And and I lied to her. I said I got to watch something for school. And you know,
you got to.
I have nieces and nephews now, so they can totally manipulate me in this same way.
My twin 5-year-old nieces manipulate me every time I go home.
And I don't mind. I just love spending time with them. So I was like, come on over. I go, it came on at 4 a.m. Like, this is how I learned how to find the paper, the motherfucking TV guy. Like, I learned how to what this shit was. It comes on at 4 a.m. So I couldn't sleep. It was like Christmas. I could not sleep.
Best.
Woke up 4 a.m, turned it on. That's when you had to turn the channel 6.
Oh, yeah.
HBO. And then it started playing, and my aunt sits next to me on the couch, and I'm watching it, and he starts cursing, and my aunt just turned to me. She goes, don't tell your mama here. And just goes in the bed. Dude, I absorbed that whole special. I was quoting it, reciting it, like the rest of my elementary, school life. I just knew it, but I didn't know what I was doing. But when I first started comedy, I learned how to perform first. Mm-hmm. So when I first went up, first time I ever hit the stage, I was 19 in Maryland at this comedy club called Greenbelt Comedy Connection. So I ain't have no substance. I just knew how to like make you laugh if you were in front of me. Like I watched younger comics.
Which is also important.
It's extremely important. Yeah. And I watched younger comics, and when I see that in them, I go, oh shit, I remember when I was like that.
Like, were they just good performers?
Yeah,
but
just
they don't
amazing, amazing
engaging,
performers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because you are, man. Even, I mean, the first time I remember seeing you out here, I was just like you take the stage and you got like this overwhelming presence.
Oh, wow.
That just like, I was like, oh, this guy's going to be hilarious. Like, you just getting up there, you smile and the way you, like, greeting, and, like, there's an ease to which you, like, took the stage.
Yeah.
And I'm sure you had that from the get-go, right?
I think so, because it was, that's all I knew. That was the
You were holding a trophy
muscle
when you walked up there. Oh. I thought it was super weird.
Y'all don't laugh. Yo, huh?
Hey, what's your say? It worked, man. I've never laughed harder in my life.
Yeah.
Do it.
So okay, that's how I started.
So then when do you start to finally get some substance?
Substance? Yeah. ironically, when I got Def Jam, because I moved to Chicago. I went to Notre Dame, right? And I graduated from Notre Dame in 95. Then I moved to Chicago, and I was a financial planner. Yes, fucking. I looked at it. I go, it's the best place to fail. Meaning that,
because
it felt like when New York cats and it felt like New York and LA, they had long memories. You know,
absolutely.
Yeah.
And people that can give you an agent, a manager, multiple club owners, people that own chains of clubs.
Yeah.
They're out in New York. They're out in LA. So if you bomb, you're a bad comic in their mind for years.
Yeah,
it takes years to correct that.
Yeah.
So you go to a city like Chicago, you can try. There's plenty of comedy outlets, but you can still fail and not have the pressure of this going to fuck me up for years.
Yeah, not be the end of the world.
Right.
You know? Yeah, and so that's why I went. I went to Chicago, and there were two. So I was able to work white rooms and black rooms. Mm-hmm. It's like comedy is very segregated now, but it was just starting to be, I don't know, there was a definite black room called All Jokes Aside on 9th and Wabash. Ray Lambert, Mary Lindsay, I can't remember the third partner in it. And then there was Zany's on North and Wells.
Sure.
And so it was like, it was mind games from the start, but in a smaller market, meaning that Bert Haas, who books Zany's, great guy, man, great father, great man, great guy.
Best.
I went up to Bert Haas and I said, hey, man, I'd like to showcase, you know, for your club. And he was like, all right, Owen, I need 7 minutes tonight, show clean. And I have a spot for you in July. Now, it was fucking October. So it was like a 9-month layover. And I knew he hung out every day on a Tuesday, right? In front of Zany's. He was there every day on Tuesday. So every day for 9 months, I would make a point to be there and be like, hey, Bert, any follow? Nope, Owen, got you July 7th. Like whatever the date was. And he knew the date.
Wow.
Every Tuesday, Bert and I would see each other. I would walk around and I'd go, hey, Bert, just checking. Nope, July. He never broke, and I never stopped coming.
Wow.
And this is like when I first started. So, you know, and I always have to tap into, I got to remember like how hungry I was. Because when you do it for a while, you go, I ain't doing that to get into this club. But that's what I did.
Yeah.
And so
real quick, do you think that mentality should never go away? Yeah.
It's weird because it should never go away, and it doesn't go away in us. But you also do get to a point where you go, well, fuck, man. Is my resume worth something for
you have to
this?
Start valuing, have some integrity about, like, what if I look at everything I've done, do I really need to drive to Brea?
And you do.
To do.
And you do. And then you better find a way to have fun in it. And then once you get there, it is fun, because at the end of the day, it's about the work. But but you can build up. I should be, why is he first? And all that shit don't matter.
Doesn't matter.
Yeah,
that,
don't matter.
And I love hearing that story, because you weren't pushing on him.
No. Nope.
You weren't like, hey, give me a spot.
Nah.
Like, I deserve a spot. You're just saying, hey, man. Anything, but every week
he took notice
now,
to you showing up.
You're in that guy's mindset of, well, it's Tuesday. I know Owen's gonna be here. And
let me tell you how he paid me back, man. This motherfucker was dope. So anyway, I end up doing the thing. He makes me an MC, and it was great. You know, you get paid. I forget, $25 a show or $50. I don't know. But it was the best.
$5 footlong.
Yeah, exactly. I know, man. It was the best. So then one time, Bert calls me, and he had a club in it was right outside the airport, St. Charles. No, but that's not the one. It was St. Pleasant.
Yeah.
Mount Pleasant, Chicago. He had a club there, and he had a showcase for Friday Night Videos. That was kind of a big deal. And he goes, I want you to host it. And they bought two cameras. And everybody had to sign an AFTRA contract, except me. I was just the host. And I was facilitating it. And so I'm hosting. I'm bringing up 9 acts, right? And they're videotaping all the acts. And then they said to me, hey, can you stretch in between the next comedian? We want to change film and cameras. So I stretch and I do some material. At the end of it, I get a contract. And they go, we're going to air you. You were the funniest dude out of everybody.
Wow.
And Bert said to me, who looked out for you? Never forgot. Something like that. He was like, yeah, I looked out for you, man. Something like that. And it was like, that was like his gift. You know what I mean? Like, he didn't have to put me on that showcase. He didn't have to, you know, he's came up. He's the one, and they want you to stretch a little bit. He's the one that told me that, and they taped me. And that was my first TV appearance.
Shit.
It was awful because I didn't know how to perform for camera, and I didn't know I was being taped. I was doing crowd work and then bouncing into bits and doing my shit, so it didn't translate
through.
But the people, you saw the people laughing really loud,
right?
but it didn't. So I never forgot when I watched it. I was like, okay, I got some work to do.
Yeah.
But it was on. I was on NBC. It was my first credit all, you know, to this.
How pumped is your mom?
She, well, you know, Bernie Mac and things like that helped make, Bernie Mac was the person who made my mom be okay with me being a comedian. Because when you tell your parents you're going to be a comedian, what they realize at that moment is, holy shit. The entire time they were raising you, it was like you pressed the record button. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, my mom was just trying to survive. You know what I mean? She was just trying to raise a man, you know, to be a productive member. She didn't know the shit was going to be recorded and repeated back in front of strangers. You know what I mean?
Yep.
She didn't know every detail. And I'm an only child, so I observed all that shit.
Right.
So my early material was about all that shit. And my mom was like, holy fuck. So you got that anxiety partnered up with.
Excuse my French.
You got that anxiety partnered with. She didn't know how show business worked. If I can make a sustainable, you know, career out of that. She knew what a lawyer was, a doctor. Well, you know, where people get a check and the 50-year, you know, watch and pen. Mm-hmm. So Bernie Mac had a room in Chicago, and he used to every Tuesday he used to perform there. And I ended up Ali LaRoy, who I do a podcast with now. He booked me on this show, and my mom came out and saw me, and Bernie would sit behind you on stage. And he would call me Owens.
Jeez, that's no pressure.
Oh my God. He would like, give him Sam Owens. And then he was so professional, man. You perform, and it was a live band, but the room was as big as his living room. It was a small room. Mm-hmm. And not saying the living room was small, it was a small room for comedy.
And the guitar cases actually had guitars in them because there was a band.
It was full band, dancers, macaronis, all that. Because Bernie wanted to be Bob Hope. He had an HBO show where it was a variety show, and this was kind of like his training ground for that. He would sit behind me and you perform, and he would laugh, man. It was the coolest shit. And he would hit you on the leg. Give him five more Owens. And my mom was there. She saw this. And I gave him five more. Give him five more. And I'm going. And it was great. Then after the show, Bernie went off to the side and talked to my mom for over an hour. And after that, she was my biggest supporter. Because he helped her understand. So then she was like, are you making your calls? Are you doing this? Bernie said you need to do that. And it was like, it was just an amazing thing he didn't have to do. What I mean?
And how great is that? Because, I mean, you're going into a world that not only does she not know about, but you don't know about it.
Don't know about it.
You're just doing it because you like to make people laugh. So to have a guy like Bernie go to your mom and be like, hey, don't worry about it. This is how this business works. Yep. This is the things you got to look out for. That is so huge for her.
Huge, man.
Were you a big fan of him, too?
Oh my God, yeah. Huge fan of Bernie.
I ain't scared of you motherfuckers.
I ain't scared of you motherfuckers. And just like,
oh, I love that Def Jam set.
Oh, yeah.
I'm a huge fan of him. I'm a huge fan of his journey just because he was told for so long that he wasn't good enough.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And he never stopped. And the places he took comedy. And then when he finally got, embraced, he knocked it out the park, man. It's like when I hear stories like, you know, my friend Leslie Jones, like for so long,
and
you
now,
can think what you want to think, say what you want, but she never stopped.
Never stopped.
I remember
and
seeing
was funny
Leslie
the whole time.
Yes,
that's what boggles my mind is Leslie Jones, and we're talking about Leslie from Saturday Night Live. That's Leslie Jones, and she's killing it now.
It's
not like she just started being funny last year. She's been that funny
the whole time.
But you know what? It's like a collect. I mean, that's such a prime example of how uncertain this business is.
And
also how it does. I mean, she's probably so appreciative and grateful of what's happening now because she's had to grind so hard. It's like, I think you get, I mean, we all want, you know, when you're starting out, you're impatient, you want it, you see the people that are getting it, and you're a little delusional, which I think you have to be to get into this, and so you're like, I could be doing that now, but like, when you get those opportunities, I think they more often than not happen when they're supposed
to. It's incredible, man. I was just honored and lucky to be there with her on her the first taping of Saturday Night Live for her. And we went to the after party. We had a meal. And I'll never forget, she just said, and her eyes were watered up a little bit. She was like, man, I wish my dad was alive to see this.
Yeah.
And to me, that said it all, because it's like, we do this because we want to do it, but I never did it for money and shit. I did it for other reasons.
Mm-hmm.
And you like to hope that those reasons are still around. Yeah. In the flesh to see it.
Yeah.
But I was like, yo, he sees it. But just to me, you know, we all humans, man, and it's this shit means something, yeah. You know, and so
sure, and you always want your parents or whoever to see that,
yeah.
just so you can let them know, hey, I'm okay.
Yeah,
I know you're worrying about me in this business, but look
I'm
at
okay.
this.
Yeah.
I'm okay.
Yeah, man.
And it's and yeah, to see what she's doing on that show now is great.
Was she one of your first buds out here when you came to LA?
Nah, man. Leslie and I would always. Leslie is such a. I don't know, just such a bright light, just such a, like, Leslie and I would meet at weird gigs, right? So, like, Miyagi's used to have
I remember that,
right?
Yeah,
I remember Miyagi's.
Yeah, so, and it was a big moat in the room, and it was everybody in there who was, like, too cool for school and really attractive people, yeah. dates and shit.
It's still like that.
And, yeah, and I remember Leslie went up, and Leslie is a powerful performer.
Mm-hmm.
Soulja, best reggae album. That's who Boo got nominated with.
Oh, okay.
Soulja, S-O-J-A.
So go get that.
There you go.
Yeah. That yeah, so man, Soulja, best reggae album.
Dude, yeah,
that's my man.
That's incredible.
Yeah,
to set the scene for people, Miyagi's was a sushi restaurant, mm-hmm. a Japanese restaurant on Sunset Boulevard.
Yep. In the heart of Sunset.
Yeah, right there. The stage is really up high,
yeah.
and then there's one or two tables, and then there's literally a moat.
Yep. So Leslie did the show, and Leslie is a pusher, like, as far as, like, if they don't respond to a joke, she'll turn it up more and turn it up more and turn mm-hmm. it up more. But that room wasn't, they weren't catching the whole, fuck, man, shit like that, you know, that kind of energy. And I went up, I think I went up two after her, and I was like, I ain't pushing. I'm just, fuck it. I'm going to take this L. I'm going to just be in pocket. So I just went up, and I'm just talking just like this.
Mm-hmm.
And it erupted, like it brought the room together for some. Everybody stopped talking. It was no clinging. I had everybody's attention. I had a really great set. It was like, I got applause, all that shit. I just, I killed, basically. But I didn't, I did the opposite of Leslie. But it wasn't from watching it from Leslie. That just was my style.
Sure.
So then she came up to me like, fuck, man, I want to know how to do that shit. You killed that bit. Like, she was just so,
yeah.
on 10, I was like, I love her forever just because she was able to just point out what we both saw happen.
Yeah. Right.
She, it wasn't that her material wasn't funny.
Right.
She just didn't, and this was years ago. She just didn't connect with that room.
Yeah.
Yeah. And this isn't her coming off stage be like, well, the reason why you did it and I didn't was because it's not. She just
honest.
Or also just walking the other way because she didn't want to, like, but it's like that dissecting of that type of shit.
She was always honest.
So
man.
I feel like imperative, yeah, right? Like
absolutely.
Because we all do our, it's such a solo adventure the entire career that, you know, and hopefully you're recording your stuff or whatever.
Yeah.
We dissected a lot on our own, but I think there's a lot of value in, like, the conversations I've had with people.
Yeah.
Even just about, you know, and it helps too with people that you're coming up with like that. Like when you guys were around, probably started around the same time.
Yeah.
So you were recognizing things like
all that shit.
Like adjusting to connect.
Yeah. Which, Leslie and I became really good friends once she got in the Comedy Store because we see each other every night and just be laughing at each other and just tripping. And I remember when Chris Rock was there and he stood in the back of the room and Leslie was on stage killing. And Chris Rock was like, wow, yeah. And just walked away. I was like, Leslie's never going to be broke again.
When was this?
I never told her that because she was just like, man, fuck, when's this shit going to happen?
Mm-hmm.
This was a while ago. And then, like, everything went in place and she went out to SNL and did what she did. And you
Chris
know.
Rock put her in top five.
Yep. Top five.
Yeah, Ghostbusters.
Work on open for her on a few spots and stuff. And but he was like, oh, yeah, all right. Yeah, he saw it. And then I was like, man, she's set.
Dope.
And she never knew that he saw. He was in the corner in the back. Saw and she was killing that motherfucker. Killing it.
Are there a handful of people that you'll stop and watch that you really
I watch. You know what's funny, man? I love I actually do. Like, when I had to audition for the Comedy Store, it reminded me how much I loved comedy. Because I was like, fuck, let me go and do these 2 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And you got to do it for a while. So I got to see everybody go up. And I was like, wow, I remember this shit, man. And you see, like, flashes of greatness in a lot of people. I stop saying somebody sucks because I just say they just haven't found it. Because, like, a lot of times when you're in your 20s, man, motherfucker suck. How you get that? It's like, they just ain't haven't found, like, their voice or their thing.
Right.
Because there's some comedians now who Comedy Central is blowing up, and I don't feel like they ready. It don't mean they suck. And mm-hmm. if you talk to them off stage, you'd be like, why aren't you talking about that?
Mm-hmm.
But that's just my taste.
Yeah.
You know, but I know what the shiny act is because I did colleges. So
sure.
I feel like a lot of the shiny acts now are being, you know,
rewarded.
Put out as a special, which is cool, but even when you talk to that artist, they even know, I could be doing more. Like, you right. just know it's some more shit you want to be doing.
Right.
But and I ain't I, mad at you for cashing in on,
sure.
you know, get that audience and do what you want to do.
Yeah,
but.
It's I never get mad at the comic for
yeah.
accepting a gig.
Right.
Because what do you expect them to do? Just be like, I'm sorry, Comedy Central.
Yeah.
I'm not ready for your yeah. money and your half hour special. Right. Like, no one's ever going to say
Come
that.
On, man. Take
so,
it. Yeah.
yeah. So, I mean, maybe let the system irritate you.
Yeah.
But no, never be the comic. Speaking of specials, I really want to talk about yours.
Yes.
The special's called Good Luck, Everybody.
Good Luck, Everybody.
And it was available on Owen Smith. isfunny.com.
Yes.
And the thing about this special, not only is it hilarious.
Thank you.
But shot entirely on iPhones.
Yes.
Yeah. Only iPhones.
On iPhones.
Not
looks fucking incredible.
And it looks great.
Man. Yeah.
It like
sounds
like,
great, which is like that was my first thing going on. I was like, all right, well how like did they get but
yeah.
the I mean it's as good as any special I've ever listened to.
Yeah.
And I love that you shot it in the fucking West Side Comedy Theater.
I did, man.
Which is to me, one of the best comedy venues that we have out
it's
here.
It's great, man.
Vastly underrated.
Yes.
I don't know if you're like me that you love the intimacy like that.
Yeah,
I mean, who
man.
Doesn't love a big theater? But like that room is deep enough and wide enough to where you can play the whole room and not feel like you're really having to turn your whole body so much.
Yeah.
And the laughs carry. And,
yeah.
And then it's also just like a real... I don't know, like, especially probably for your style that's very conversational.
Yeah, man. I was talking about something really intimate and personal to me, and I wanted to capture it in an intimate and personal setting. And I like those guys over there because West Side is owned by like 30 people.
Yeah.
I keep meeting like every white dude with a beard.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
hey, you're on West Side. I'm like, damn. Yeah. And so, but they're part of this group called Improv Olympic, mm-hmm. and we used to have the same college agent. Bash Schuler, I don't know if they're still with them or not. And I was like, they were gracious enough. This was a purely an organic thing, man. I had something I wanted to say, and I didn't want to spend a lot of money. And because in 2007, I spent all the money I had basically on a comedy special. It's the mm-hmm. most expensive demo tape on YouTube. It's called
yeah.
it's called Owen Smith Anonymous.
Yeah, yeah.
And
it's hilarious.
I burnt all my money. And the camera guy who was supposed to get the money shot, that close-up where
yeah.
every punchline and every special was delivered,
right.
he was soft focus. He was fuzzy. So all
oh,
my
no.
jokes are delivered off my left shoulder.
Oh,
so
geez.
I couldn't sell it anywhere. But if you're just a fan of comedy and you just watch it, it's funny.
Yeah.
I've seen people just crack up like, why isn't it? But to the buyers, they go, oh, man, we can't sell.
Yeah, we
so
can't use that.
I had to take that L. So I lost a patch of hair over that shit. I was lost a girlfriend. I was stressed.
Wow.
I just was like, fuck. But I always gamble on me, but I had to lick my wounds. It took me 7 more years before I was like, fuck it, I'm going to try it again.
No shit. Mm-hmm.
And I just wanted to use something. I was like, everybody's always on their phones. And the cameras kept getting better and better. And, you know, I'd written on shows and I'd been on camera on shows and all that stuff and talk to cameramen and they go, it's all about lighting. Because you always go, what you shoot that on? What you shoot that on? And there's one camera guy who goes, look, man, it's all about lighting.
Mm-hmm.
You can't fix bad lighting. And I go, what's better lit than a comedy club?
Yeah.
What's better lit than that small, intimate comedy club?
Right.
And so I said, let me see this iPhone. And I had the iPhone 5S. And they were talking about the lens. And I put it on. I go, oh, this looks dope. And I started doing tests and then they had lenses you could buy for
mm-hmm.
it. So I bought the lenses and I was doing a little test. And I go, I'm going to shoot a special on this shit. And
oh,
so,
shit.
And then I go, all right, this is what I'm going to do. And I just got an American Express card and I bought 10 iPhones. And I had a relationship. It just came into place, man. So many people were like just available to help me do favors. I got to work with a DP who I love, this guy named Bill Berner. And he was excited about the idea because it was like, he was like, this is, yeah, let's do this shit. This is mm-hmm. different. So we set it up. It's not just like people are holding iPhones. It's not like your auntie is like, yeah, baby, and it's not shaking with the laughs and stuff.
Yeah, yeah. She's not like trying to focus on your joke and then all of a sudden she gets a text. She's like, oh, hold on for 1 second.
No,
one person's playing on the iPhone. The other one's like, oh, Angry Birds is on this iPhone. I got to do this stuff.
By the way, when you walk into an Apple store and get 10 iPhones, they give you like a Steve Jobs old turtleneck.
Yo, they sent the dude out because I did it at the time. Samsung had just, I guess, ripped off iPhone's, interface or whatever it is.
Yeah, yeah.
So, and they had just paid him in pennies with dump trucks, because Apple sued him.
Yeah.
So I walked in. I go, yeah, I need to buy 10 of these. And they were like, why do you want 10? And I was like, fuck, let me just, well, I have a business and I want to hand them out to my employees for the, okay. And they sent a guy with a different color shirt. And he was like, well, sir, you can only purchase 2 at a time. And that's the limit. You cannot buy more than 2 iPhones from the Apple store. So I had to go back 5 different times. But I bought my brother-in-law.
How many fake mustaches did you buy?
Man, I know. So I went between the one in Century City and the one in the Promenade.
Yeah,
I bounced. And so I collected them, and I had all 10. And as I was unpackaging them, I was like, man, I could shoot this shit and return these motherfuckers. Because I started unpackaging it, like, really carefully, right? And I wish I videotaped it. I videotaped me returning them. It's in the special. You'll see it in the special.
Yeah, it's in the end, right?
It's in the end. Yeah man. And so I go, so I talk to my crew, and I go, this is what I want to do. So we got to be real careful with these. We're going to videotape it, the special. I'm going to dump the footage, and then I'm going to return the iPhones. And everybody just started rolling. And I was like, let's do it. And so so we set it up, and they have Steadicams that you can buy.
Right.
I bought Steadicams for like $230 a pop. I bought 2 of them.
Awesome.
From, what's the name of that store on Fairfax and 3rd, where you go get all the shit.
I know what you're talking about, yeah.
Yeah, that one.
Sam Goody.
Jesus Christ.
Did that, and I bought a few monopods, and I bought some tripods, and we locked it off. And Bill knew some camera tricks, so he married a camera to the back wall, so it looks real cool.
Yeah.
We got the wide shot. It's professionally done, man, but it's all on iPhones. And then we dump
such
the footage.
Such a cool, different hook, man.
Yeah,
it's
man.
Because like, I feel like it. Were you thinking too when I do another one? Got it. Were you like, I don't want to do it the way that specials are just.
Yeah, but
like
yeah.
In a theater. I mean,
yeah. Well, I didn't want it to feel overproduced. I really wanted you to feel. I wanted the whole thing to just be organic. It came from an idea. I go, people are watching everything on their phones, so why not shoot something on the phone?
Right.
And then I didn't have anybody go up ahead of time. This is a special, y'all. So on this, we need you to laugh big and clap big. And so what you'll see is Neil Brennan was kind enough to let me hop on his show. I just hopped on the end of people's shows, and Nat let me hop on the end of her show. And so I did it on a Sunday. I did it at 8 o'clock, and I did the end of Neil's show. And so what you'll see is the crowd. They think I'm doing 10 minutes, then I'm doing 20, and then 30. And you see me winning them all. I'm getting
so
applause.
Fucking
and at
cool,
the end,
man.
I got a genuine standing ovation at the end of both shows. And it was like, I want to just put this out. I just want to put this moment out. Just capture this moment. And the whole special was about me. I was engaged at the time, so I was just reflecting on everything that it took for me to get to this moment where I got down on one knee and proposed to the now love of my life. But, like, I'm basically surprised I'm still alive from all the places I let my dick take me. It's basically the through line. And it's like, listen, let's just laugh at this shit. You know, I cannot believe I'm here. You know what I mean?
And what a perfect sort of... and what a perfect moment in time where you're like, forgive the term, your dick memoir.
Yes, this is what it is.
You're like
dick war.
Yeah, this is your dick war. So you're like you're like looking back like it was a good time, but all those times are behind me.
All those times
I think you can order the dick war at Blue Sushi.
Yeah, I think you can. Yeah. It comes around on that little conveyor belt.
What and the special I've got about 15 minutes in and I'm going to watch the rest.
Oh great.
But so you're again like the material is heavily about you were engaged at the time.
Yeah,
so you hadn't gotten
just
married
got engaged.
Yet.
Nope.
So and I'm assuming it's so the whole theme of it really is about that transition period.
Transition. I talk about every bad or horrible dating story or relationship that I experienced and I learned a little something from each one that helped me be prepared for what I was walking into.
And the connections with like other married dudes that you were like that you share like about like being on the airplane and telling her that
how we all work together. I tell the story about I was joking about you. When women try to steal your day, like after you sleep with them, they try to steal your next morning for breakfast or whatever, and they just assume that you're theirs for the rest of the day.
Right.
And because my mom didn't raise me with those tools. Like, I used to be like, how you talk to these women? I don't want to get involved. Like, that's when you need a father to be like, look, man, you got to look them in the eye. You got to be honest. You just need somebody to validate what you're feeling.
Right.
But you're just
afraid. So you had no clue to how when you started getting dating.
No, man. So I was the dude. I say I felt like Nat King Cole in the Lil Wayne world because I was raised to be this gentleman.
Yeah.
But I don't always have gentlemanly thoughts. I just be like, yo, get the fuck out. You want to say that, but you can't.
Right.
And so the true story, a friend of mine was like, get a picnic basket. Leave it by the door and tell her you got a picnic to go to in the morning. I was like, who the fuck? What are you talking about? But me and a buddy of mine, we went to Target and we looked for picnic baskets. Because first, we didn't even know. I don't even know where to get a picnic basket from. You know what I mean?
Jellystone National Park. You got to steal right, it back boo-boo. From Yogi. From a cartoon
Hey, oh, boo boo, why are all these black guys taking our picnic baskets?
They must be lying to bitches. Hey, oh, boo boo. Man, I did not know, man. I was just so clueless. And so, and I looked at it, and when I went, I just missed the sale.
Basket?
Yeah. So all they had was like this coup de grace picnic. I didn't know. They're picnic basket for $150.
What?
I was like, I could pay her to leave for that much. I ain't
doing
that.
Yeah, exactly.
So I said, I'm going to just get a suitcase. I'm going to lie and say I got a flight.
Yeah.
And so the girl comes over, and I try to do the lie. I got a flight in the morning, so you can't.
Yeah.
You know, stay the night like you normally do.
Right.
And she goes, I'll take you to the airport. What time's your flight?
Oops.
You know I didn't think to lie out that
no,
far.
Man.
Right.
You know what I mean? I'm panicking. I go, it's 8 in the morning.
She and goes, the time is crucial at this point.
It's crucial.
The time you pick.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I say 8 in the morning. She goes, well, you got to be there at 6 o'clock. So wake me up, 5:30. So I'm like, fuck it. I'm going to buckle in. I'm going to ride the lie out. Because I did not know that it was okay to go listen. I did not know how to set boundaries.
Yeah.
So the whole moral is bound. You learn bound. Listen.
Right.
I don't need. This is too much. You got to have that conversation. I did not know. So I'm riding the lie out, man. I'm in the car, 5:30 in the morning, being driven to the fucking airport. I was living in Chicago.
The days of Uber.
Yeah, man. Yeah. Before the days of Uber, man.
And then you packed a fake bag.
Fake bag. And what was in it was awful. It was dirty clothes, a phone book. I don't know if you remember phone books. Fucking phone book for weights in case she picked it up. I thought that would fool her.
Oh, my God.
Then I get to the airport, and she's like, my roommate's locked out, so can I just crash at your spot till, you know. No, she said, I'm locked out.
Yeah.
So can I crash at your spot since you're not going to be there? So I'm like, yeah. So now I can't go home because I was going to catch a cab home. It's going to be a $50 lie. Stuck at the airport. Don't know what to do. And you got to buy the special to hear the rest of the story.
Oh, great. Yes, I love
what
that.
A tease.
I love that, dude.
It's only $5,
it.
Man.
Dude, $5. Yeah, it's $5.
And it's safe. You can buy it through PayPal if you don't trust my, you know, but it's powered through VHX. They're a great company. And you can, go to owensmithlive.com or owensmithisfunny.com. And, you know, we're just doing this organic, man. Just putting the word out.
I can't recommend it enough because, you're one of the funniest comics that I love to watch. And again, like, the material is so great, especially for, I mean, like, because you cover so well the just the transition of it. I've seen you know, talk about it on stage, too. And it's like, there's a lot of dudes that are... I mean, even dudes that are like in their early 20s, it's still like a relatable thing because it's happening at all different like spans of life.
Oh, yeah. And then, guys could watch, if you're 22, 23, you can watch this special so either you don't go into these pitfalls or like just so you're prepared. You're like, oh, wait, shit, that's going to happen to me?
Yeah.
I'm going to drive like 100 miles to someone's house thinking I'm going to get laid and then just going to want to
talk. Oh, man.
And girls, hopefully you can laugh at yourselves after seeing the special.
Absolutely.
That's one of the best compliments. Someone told me a woman told me that I get women. Like, because that's the thing.
Perfect.
When I do this material, I didn't want it to come out angry. Women really will laugh at you. Like, you just see it through a different lens. That's all.
Exactly.
Perfect. I want to talk about before we. You got about 15 more minutes?
Yeah, man.
All right, cool.
Yeah.
You mentioned being in the back of the Comedy Store and seeing Chris Rock talk to Leslie. When did your. Because you were head writer on Everybody Hates Chris.
Not
right?
head writer. No, okay. No. I was a punch up writer on Everybody Hates Chris and promised a staff writing position for season 5, but there was no season 5.
Okay.
But I was very fortunate. I was involved in, you know. When I watched the episodes, I was like, oh, that was my joke. That was my joke. You know, but I learned so much. Just
was that your first writing gig out here?
Yeah, man.
So I'm curious, okay, because you've been in a shit ton of commercials, TV,
but
the writing stuff is what I first, I think, when I saw you, either people told me about, you know, and I was like, and they're like, oh, this guy writes for this and this. Yeah. And I was like, holy shit, because that always is, writing jobs are very, People are very picky with who they pick to write on shows.
Sure. Yeah.
And that's a tough world to crack.
I was fortunate in that I knew very little about it. You know what I mean? I was really operating from ignorance and just, and at the time I was on, my father would always send me books. He always loved, he always loves reading.
Mm-hmm.
And before Ali LeRoy and I, we do a podcast called Alias Smith and LeRoy, where we have intimate conversations like this, mm-hmm. with people in Black Hollywood.
Okay.
So like Debbie Allen, or we talk to John Ridley, who wrote 12 Years a Slave.
Oh, shit.
So we just have
wow.
those connections. We've seen them out, and we've worked with them. Like Debbie worked extensively on Everybody Hates Chris, and she directed so many episodes.
Nice.
And she's just amazing.
You should get our boy Jaleel White on there. He's been on this podcast
we would
three
love
times.
To yeah. have Jaleel
I'll put you in touch
on.
With him. Yeah.
I gave Jaleel the business in an all-star basketball game.
Really?
Oh, Laugh-a-palooza. Can I tell the story real quick?
Absolutely.
I scored. I think I was MVP. I don't remember, but I got 2 dunks. And as the story goes on, I got 4 dunks. And Jaleel's mad competitive, and he's so in shape.
Yeah.
And he was like trying. And I was in the best shape of my life at this time. It was Laugh-a-palooza in Atlanta at Morehouse. And he's checking me. He's trying to D me up.
Yeah, he played with like the NBA players. Family Matters shot on the lot where Space Jam shot. So
he can
used
ball.
To fucking play with the NBA stars.
He can ball. So he came to the dude that was giving the most business on the other team, which was me. I'm killing it. I think they beat us, but I don't remember. Rodney Perry threw me an alley-oop. It's legendary as far as a
please
comedian.
Please tell me you dunked in his face and go, oh, shit, did I do that?
I wish I dunked on him and did that. But here's the crazy part. We both had the same flight out.
Yeah.
And so we saw each other in the lobby area, waiting for the plane. And he starts talking shit again because he's a shit talker.
Right.
And I didn't know this about Jaleel. And I was like, yeah, man, I gave y'all. So we talking shit. Then we get on the plane. This motherfucker walks to first class. I walked to seat 58C. I was like, I lost that battle.
There were 52 seats on the plane, by the way. So,
I was outside the plane. Then we get off at the same time, and he had somebody waiting for him with a sign and shit.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to walk to, this is at the time when you would, I had to walk to that fucking shuttle.
Yeah.
Take me to the lot. I was like,
lot C.
Oh, Jaleel won. Son of a bitch.
Yeah, he won the game of life.
Yeah, but every time I see him, it's like, what's up, man? What's up,
dude?
Man? Mm-hmm. I gave him the business.
Yeah,
in
for
that
sure
game.
We'll make that happen.
Yeah.
Oh,
wait, so the podcast is on.
Alias Smith and LeRoy.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, Alias Smith and LeRoy. And we talked to it was great conversations. Gina Prince Blythewood, who wrote and directed Love and Basketball.
That's
and
one of my favorite
Beyond
movies.
The Lights. Yeah, man.
I'll for sure listen to that one.
Yeah, we got access, man. And so we're having conversations with people that are just more than a soundbite. So you're just getting to hear their story and it's doing really well. But Ali LeRoy was a comedian. And he branched off into writing. He was the showrunner of Everybody Hates Chris. And he sent me a text. He's real mysterious dude, man. Really nice dude. He was the best man at my wedding. Like,
nice.
We're friends. Like, I love this guy. But prior to that, he's just always real mysterious. And he would text me. He was like, yo, no. This way, I was on the phone booking a college gig. Because that's how I made a living for years.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw an unknown number. Of course, this Batman motherfucker would have an unknown number. I don't click over because that's never been good for me.
Yeah,
unknown numbers is always some weird shit. So I don't
answer
it.
It's like a bill collector or something.
Yeah, but I had that feeling like let me see what this is. So I listened to the message. Hey, this is the offices of Ali LeRoy. It was Ali. Hey, man, call me back. I want to know if you want. This is what he said. I want to know if you want to come act with Chris Rock in this thing I'm doing. That was the message. I go, fuck yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I call back. Voicemail shit.
Ugh.
And I'm hitting them up like, yo, what's up? I get an email, we found somebody. Fuck, this is for the pilot of Everybody Hates Chris, so I don't get on it. They hired another guy, so I secretly want the pilot to fail because I'm not on it, but it keeps getting all this press and I go, of course this is gonna be successful.
Yeah.
Then I get a email from Ali like, yo, call this dude and see if you can come act with Chris. That was in the morning. I don't get it till 7 p.m. because I was doing colleges. I was like, oh, I know I missed it now.
Yeah.
I call him. He answers the phone, which he rarely does. He's like, yo, what's up? Yo, I got the email. He goes, yeah, man. Call the number. It's not too late. Call the dude. You good. So he got me a job reading off-camera voiceover because it was a voiceover show. So I was doing Chris's voice. But my mom said that. I was doing that shit.
Oh, shit.
And then one day... Like, I don't know, episode 5 or 6, he comes over to me, goes, this scene ain't working. You got anything? And I was like, do I? And so I had, like, no, because I would see stuff. Like, I'm an actor, too. So I would see stuff, and I go, oh, man, that would land better if she said that. Well, that line, he should say that line, or maybe this, or the scene should be about this. And I would always write notes. And the reason why I did that is my dad sent me this book called The Alchemist. And And before I went on that set, I was so intimidated because I had never been on the set of a single camera show on Paramount's lot. I did not know how to behave. So I didn't know if I should be trying to meet people or if I should just
hang in the background.
Yeah. And it's like, and The Alchemist, it was something that they said, I'm paraphrasing, but basically, if you sit in silence, all your answers, all the answers to your questions will be revealed, as opposed to if you're going to, hey man, what's your name? Hey, Emma. Yeah. So when I was on set, I would just be quiet because I would meet people or people would walk by and I was like, who's that guy? And you would hear somebody talk shit. I can't stand the way Brad come in here eating all the bagels. Like, well, that's Brad. And I write his name down.
And he eats all the bagels.
Yeah, you know, bagel eating motherfucker.
Hey, bagel eating Brad. That's your nickname, man. Yeah. You're looking for one. Yeah.
Yeah. And I would just be quiet and somebody else would walk by and they'd be like, man, he don't, that's the, you know, that's the line producer. He don't like paying motherfucker gonna tell me. I was like, line producer. And then I would look on the call sheet what his name was and I would write his name down. So while I was on set, I was like learning people's names without saying shit. And I did the same for my notes for the script. I would see shit and I'd be like, man, that could be better. And I was learning how a script was written and I would read the sides and read it and just look at, you know, the structure.
Just for your own, like,
Like I was blown away by how simple it was. It was like going from PC to Mac. Like when you struggle, it's not like you got to learn shit. I had to unlearn shit. Yeah. Like, man, just the action line, just say, oh, it's right there. That's how I would have said it. Mm-hmm. Oh, and they just wrote it. It was like.
But again, it's having the confidence to speak up and like, because you're just, you're you got to know your place too a little bit. But
that
there's
it.
Because there's the, it's all about taking a risk. And you're like, do I want to speak up? And then if they go, that wasn't funny, then that was your one shot, man.
One shot.
Yeah.
So Ali says, it was a line for Tashina. And I wish I remembered the line. I'm sorry, I don't. But he goes, yo, you got anything? I goes, yeah, man. Tisha say this. And he laughed. Like he's a real honest, his antenna for comedy is just honest. Like if it's funny, he just laughs, and he trusts that, and that's why the show was a success.
That's great.
He doesn't, like, go past that. He goes, shit made me laugh. I'm putting it. He goes, yo, T, say this. They redo the scene. She says it. The crew laughs. Everybody laughs, and I'm like,
here you go. To you, huh?
Then Chris Rock appears out of nowhere. This is the first time he's ever been on set.
Yeah.
He comes out of nowhere, and he goes, fuck that. Say this. And he gives her another line.
Oh.
They reset the scene. She does that. They laugh. So now I want Chris to like me. So I'm thinking, I got another one. Have her say this. And Ali laughs. Tashina, say this.
Oh, God.
So then.
Whoa. You're playing a game of can you top this?
Yeah,
with
can
Chris
you top
Rock?
This? Yes. So then she does it. They laugh louder than, you know, the other two. Chris goes, say this. Gives her another line. They laugh, but it's it wasn't as dope.
Was it clearly a like here who's got a bigger dick at this point?
Well, I don't know to other people because we're in Video Village,
right?
And Chris isn't over by us. He's over here. I'm holding my hand like you can see me. We're at Video Village watching the scene, and Chris is off to our right.
Video Village is where the director and producers and writers sit to watch everything that's unfolding.
Yeah, so he'll fly in, give Tashina a line, and fly back out to his. So he didn't really. Yeah. He said what's up, but he stood away from us for whatever reason.
Yeah.
She doesn't. It was okay. I should have shut the fuck up. But I wanted him to. I was like, I got one more.
He's already down.
We do it.
This was your Mortal Kombat finish him.
Son, I do it. They crack up. And Chris goes, nah, I got nothing. And I was like, shit. Like in my head, he's about to be like, you, what's your name, kid? What are you? That's what I'm thinking.
Here's the keys to show business.
That's what my dumb gullible ass was thinking.
Write my new special.
And so then at the end, everybody's like in this receiving line, like shaking his hand. And I had to catch a flight to do a college because they were so nice. They would let me do colleges on weekends and shit.
That's great.
And so I had a red eye to catch. So I shake Chris's hand. When I shake his hand, he elbows me in the ribs with the other hand. He goes, what's up, nigga? Like that. I'm thinking, I'm going to hear Chris Rock call me nigga. Chris Rock called me
nigga. That's the name of your next special.
I was so happy, man. I'm driving. I drive to the airport. I'm holding the hand that he shook and shit. And when you walk in LAX, you know how they do the magazines? He was on the cover of every magazine. I was like, he just called me nigga. Like, it's in my head. I'm on the plane.
People are like, who's letting the schizophrenic on the airplane?
He's holding his hand up in the air. What's he going to do with that?
He was called the funniest man in America. Like, on the cover of the magazine.
This is the greatest day ever.
Call me nigga. And I go, I killed a college. I'm like, y'all don't know. Chris Rock just called me nigga. Yeah, like, good. I was killing.
Dude, yeah.
You know, and then, you know, and that was my experience. And they trusted me a little more with my sensibility for the show because I totally got it. And it was just a great learning ground, man. I learned so much about the personalities of writers. I learned so much about the network, You know, the creative the dance between creatives in the studio and the network, and just
the onset experience is like you can't talk about it.
It's the best acting school.
Man,
it's the best acting training.
Absolutely,
you cannot get that in the acting class because it's shit happening, man. While you're trying to learn your lines and deliver your lines, this motherfucker's over there, you know, setting up the next shot, building the next set. People are just they ready to go, you know.
Right.
And I learned so much stuff. Like if you're bought on a show as a co-star or a guest star, they're not gonna shoot your shit first. It ain't about you. They're gonna call you in at 7 in the morning, but they're gonna have you go. You ain't gonna shoot your shit till they are racing against sunlight and everybody's gonna be in a hurry.
Yeah. Not,
you just
and then,
learn.
And then you better be ready.
You better be ready.
Yeah.
You better know your shit. And so I used to try to help out as many comedian friends of mine that got bought on a show because they would come in at 7. They hike, they learn their lines, they eating lunch, they starting to lose their energy, they starting to lose their confidence. They say, man, what the fuck? I was here all day because it was new to them.
Yeah.
So I would tell them, look, we probably not going to fuck with you till around 4 or 5, so just know that. We want you here because we want to know where the fuck you at. Like, we would just laugh about it, and I would come run their lines with them, and they would come shine so they wouldn't get cut out the show. You know what I mean? But I had to learn that because some of my friends came on, and they would go.
Dude, that's big.
They would get cut out the show.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm like, yo, if you shine, that's great. I want you to win. You know what I mean? I don't know how I was raised, but it's like if you win, that's good because then you going. It's going to help everything.
Yeah.
Right? And so I don't want to see.
Show,
makes you
look good, and then hey, if the show's good, you stay employed.
Stay employed. But I look at comedians as family, so it's like I want to help my family.
Absolutely.
Because I know what it's like. I know what this could do for your career. You out here like, and you on, and our show at the time was one of the hottest shows. Like, it was like, I'm on this set. Like, this is what everybody's talking about. Because you're on a lot, you're in a bubble. You don't know what people are talking about.
Right.
But you go out, when we first came out, the first 2 years, it was everywhere. They put so much money behind it, and it delivered. Mm-hmm. So, it meant shit to people. So, I was like, I don't want you. And I remember how I felt when I did Def Jam, and my Def Jam didn't air. I felt like I wasn't black enough. That shit hurt me.
For real?
Yeah, man.
Wow.
Years later.
How often are black men thinking that?
You think that. In my first special, I talk about being black is exhausting. It's not hard because we ain't being hung. Well, let me take that back.
But, yeah.
You know what I'm saying? It's not like a lunch break hung now. You know what I mean?
Right.
It's like the shit's still happening, but not to the degree. But it's just exhausting because you're always wondering what type of black to be until you just go, man, this is me. It takes a while to go, well, this is who I am. And once you own that, you realize, oh shit, I'm funnier just being who I always was than chasing after what I thought I should have been. But that's just a journey that I think everybody takes, no matter what color you are, but just because I'm a black male, that was mine, you know?
Sure. How did you take that experience writing for Everybody Hates Chris to when you got the Arsenio gig?
Oh man, Arsenio actually asked me to do it, and that was surreal as fuck.
Wow.
Because,
Do you watch Arsenio, during his first run?
Yeah, was like, shit, man.
I remember it being a big deal, but I mean, from a black man's perspective, was that just like I mean, I remember watching Magic on it, and because he's my favorite basketball player, and I was like, this is the coolest shit ever. Arsenio just seemed like the coolest motherfucker ever.
The coolest motherfucker ever, man. The most charismatic dude. Yeah, Arsenio. It was just, motherfucker, he had one name, and you knew him. It was the greatest shit ever. So when
Madonna, Sting, Arsenio.
Arsenio, come on, man. I had a vested
Slater.
Interest in his success.
Sure.
Yeah. I just wanted him to succeed, and then they asked me to come down and see a taping of the show, and I saw it, and then I was supposed to meet with Arsenio, and he goes like this, oh, him? Yo, so when you start? I was like, I don't have to meet. He was like, listen, man, just can you give me 13 weeks? Just give me 13. And I was like, well, I got this going on because I had a script deal at the time with Warner Brothers, and I got this. He said, come on, man, just give me 13. There's stuff I want to do, and I don't feel like I just need you for 13. And I was like, fuck it, I'll give you 13. And that turned into a longer run, and he got renewed. Like, my goal was to get him renewed. There were politics behind the scene that, you know, I'm not going to speak on because I only know some of the story that happened. But, yeah, man, it was amazing. Because I'm going to tell y'all on the record, Arsenio is one of the funniest motherfuckers. Like, he's far funnier than you've seen in that on that show.
Yeah.
Like, if you just give him a topic.
Well, I mean,
oh my God, he's amazing.
I mean, watch him at the Comedy Store.
Amazing.
When he goes on stage and just kind of messes around, and it's just like, okay, yeah,
dude.
This guy knows exactly what he's doing.
Incredible.
I love the fact that that you have the writing career.
Yeah.
I mean, we just touched on a couple of things, Arsenio, like you also did. Are We There Yet?
Are We There Yet?
Yeah,
man. That was great.
And first of all, did you ever meet Cube?
Cube was great, man. Cube is somebody that you can't make small talk with. You
really?
Know what I mean? Like,
what's that?
I felt like I couldn't walk over to him and be like, man, the weather's crazy, right? Like, like I had to have something to say.
He'd be like, you know, yeah, today was a good day. You're like, oh, shit, it's Ice Cube.
Cube nice. Is so cool, man. And when he laughs so hard. Like, he what he said to me, how he loosened me up, because he could tell I was nervous around
yeah.
him. He said, motherfucker, I'll be seeing you in them commercials and shit. Give me your autograph. Like, that was what he said to me. And after that, it was
how
like,
is that?
It was cool. And so then I would be able to, like, give him a note and say this. And if he loved it, he would laugh so hard and couldn't wait to do it. Like, he was like, yeah, we got to do it. Like, he would be so excited.
That's great.
About the work, man.
And it's fantastic.
Yeah, it was fantastic. Yeah, Cube was
a business savvy dude for sure, right?
Amazing, yeah. man. Like,
so
I'm going to tell you this.
Sure.
Every great artist that I've ever come up with, they all are just honest, right? Mm-hmm. So, like, I went to go see him at B.B. King's in New York. New York is, and when it comes to hip hop, they snobs, right?
Sure.
And what's funny is Cube was getting older, so the show started at 8:03. Yay, yay. Cube came out. You weren't waiting until 10:15. It ain't young Cube. It's like, so, yo, yeah. my feet hurt, motherfucker.
It's, so it's, yay, not yay. Like, it's not like CP time going
nah,
like that.
Nah,
no, it's
up in the club.
8:03.
Like, get yay, to yay. It. Yay, yay. Done by 9:15.
I hope that's his alarm clock. I hope Ice Cube just at yeah, yeah. 7 a.m. Yeah, yeah. Hit that.
Yeah. Time to do it. So, yeah, man. So, I talked to him afterwards. I go, I love the show, but I saw the crowd. They weren't vibing. I wish I experienced Cube when he did the House of Blues out here, because it would have been people on the walls crying.
Right.
Quoting
it's
all
West
the lyrics.
Coast.
West
it's ice,
Coast.
It's Ice Cube, man.
Yeah. So I talked to him after, go, yo, I saw the show. Thank you so much for the ticks. And I said, man, I loved it, man. He goes, really? He goes, I thought that was our worst show. Just for him to say that.
Wow. Right.
It's like, yo, you saw what I saw.
Yeah.
Like, they were just snobs. They loved it, but they were just snobs, man.
Right.
They were just like,
They're just sitting there going, Biggie for life.
Yeah.
And you're just like, dude, you could still like me. It's okay.
It was that.
We're just always our harshest critics. Right?
Yeah, I mean, man. But just the fact that he said, I was like, oh, shit. I didn't want to go up there. Yo, they felt a little tight.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not going to say that.
Yeah.
You know
like,
what I mean?
It's like, that's Ice Cube.
Yeah, because I'm not looking for that, because I genuinely enjoyed it. Like, So I said, I loved it.
Yeah.
And he was like, yeah, I thought that was our worst show. I was like, wow, son, that's why you are known to everyone, because you're just honest.
Yeah.
Yeah, the great performers. I just wrote on the Guy's Choice Awards.
And, oh, that's right. Yeah. How was it?
It was fun, man. Taraji P. Henson, who I love, man, and Terrence Howard, they were great, man. And they some honest motherfuckers, man. They some honest motherfuckers.
How in with like the entertainment black culture are you? Like with
in
as far
with
as
it?
Like I mean like how I mean are you
I don't know if people in black Hollywood are like get Owen Smith. Like I don't know if they're like that, but because I'm also an actor and a comedian, like when I'm around other black artists, I think my face is recognized.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know,
yeah.
and I hope that when you saw my face, it was making you laugh.
Yeah.
So when people meet me, they go, "Hey, I know you.
Yeah.
We went to high school, right?" Or that kind
right.
of shit.
Yeah.
Or, man, or they remember the commercials. And they're like, I went to an NBA game one time, and all of the Denver players, they were quoting my commercials when they were running past me. Like, so it's
that's incredible.
So
that's
I think it's bubbling in that
yep.
regard. But I want people to know me as a stand-up's always been my first love. So I just want people to know me as a stand-up. I don't know how to do that. I just put the special.
Well,
out
keep making dope specials.
Yeah,
man.
Here's
Thanks,
how
man.
You do it. Go to Owen Smith is funny. Look, find a special. Good luck, everybody. It's
Thanks,
it's $5,
five
and
bucks.
You can see it. You can laugh at it, and you can get to know Owen Smith as a great comic. And
yeah, this is why I love this podcast too, man. It's like I mean, those stories. I'm just so like we're with the comedy clubs. Like, there's no time for you to give that backstory about your childhood and your mom and the impact on your life. Like, that shit is so incredible
Thanks,
to me, man.
Yeah.
Do I know how to speak French?
That's true. I couldn't wait to raise my hand. I was like, I know the answer to this shit. Shit,
oh,
motherfucker.
Dude, thank you so much for
coming,
man.
Thank you.
Someday, and I'll say this on record, so will be a writer on a show, and you'll give them a high five, and they'll go, Owen Smith just called me up, and that's all the time we've got, folks. Thanks for being on the show.
Perfect.
So, that's the show.
for listening to the About Last Night podcast with Brad Williams and Adam Ray. Boy, they're a lot of fun, huh? Why don't you subscribe on iTunes to this fucking podcast? Give them a 5-star rating so this midget and this Jew can feel good about themselves for a couple minutes. Also, get on your iPhone or Android and get the podcast app. You can also listen to it on Stitcher or aboutlastnightpodcast.com, where you can hear past episodes with great guests like Lisa Kudrow, Paul Feig, Kevin Nealon, Bob Saget, Dion Cole, Chris D'Elia, Adam Devine, Michael McDonald, Jaleel White, Bud Friedman, Steve-O, Harlan Williams, Tom Arnold, Ron Funches, Rick Glassman, Blake Anderson, Anders Holm, Jessamay Peluso, Joey McIntyre, and many, many more. I'm Tony Danza. Thanks for listening to the About Last Night podcast. Good night. That's it, right? You got it? Sweet. Boy, it smells good in that booth, by the way. What kind of candle is that? Hanukkah Willow? Nice.
If you like listening to comedy, try watching it on the internet. The folks behind the Sideshow Network have launched a new YouTube channel called Wait For It. It's got interviews with comedians like Reggie Watts, Todd Glass, Liza Schleichinger, I've been friends with her for 10 years. One of the funniest people out there, and I still have a hard time with the last name, Liza. Our very own Owen Benjamin, that's me, takes you on a musical journey down internet rabbit holes and much more. You don't have to wait any longer. Just go to youtube.com/waitforitcomedy. There's no need to wait for it anymore because it's here and it's funny. And I love you.